You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline and bring in the man, Joel Corey, former NFL agent, who wrote an article at CBSSports.com about how much top free agent player and tag player should target in their new deals. And, of course, two of the people that you covered in this, Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz, of significant interest to Cleveland Browns fans. And, Joel, let's start with Alex Mack, because your numbers here don't seem that unreasonable to me. And you can talk through everybody through those and how you came at that for the Pro Bowl Center.
Well, Alex Mack didn't opt out of a contract of $24 million over 3 years to take less money. The sure. thing was, when he signed that deal, it made him the highest paid center. Since then, he's been leapfrogged by the Pouncey brothers and Rodney Hudson. So the goal is going to be to become the highest paid center again. Initially, I was toying around with become the first $10 million per year center, but he isn't quite the same player he was before the broken leg, so just marginally becoming the highest paid center and having the best three-year cash flow of a center in a deal would probably be sufficient.
So if you're the Browns and you know where you are now, okay, in terms of your ability to go out and win a Super Bowl, you know Alex Mack's 30 going on 31, which I don't think many people are as aware of. What do you think about that value for the Browns at this time? Is that something that you would say, if that was the deal, if that's what it took, that you would make that plunge?
I'd overpay Mitchell Schwartz before I would overpay Alex Mack, because you use the first-round pick on someone who presumably was to hedge your bets against
and play
Alex
that
Mack
position.
Leaving.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think if you got to pick one or the other, you take Mitchell Schwartz. If Jacksonville wants to make Alex Mack the first $10 million per year center, so be it. Let them do that.
Yep. All right, now you talked about Mitchell Schwartz, and I got to say, you know, we've talked a lot about on this show, what if, and asking people, you know, listeners, Browns fans, et cetera, what if Mitchell Schwartz wanted to be the highest paid right tackle in football? And everybody at that point says, oh, well, in that case, then no. Solid player. Not exceptional, hasn't been to a Pro Bowl, and we know how easy it is to get to one of those these days. A good player, not a great run blocker, very good, very reliable, but the numbers you have here almost like blew my mind. 5 years, $47.5 million, putting him, you know, basically $9.5 million per year, making him the highest paid right tackle by almost $2.5 million, by about 33%, because I don't consider Lane Johnson, knowing that they want to move him over to be a pure right tackle. But how did you come to that number, and is that one that's going to make people balk?
See, that's where we disagree, because what position is Lane Johnson playing right now? Right tackle.
We'll see in this season. We'll see if he ever plays there.
It's still the left tackle, and Doug Peterson in the press conference a couple of weeks ago said he's our left tackle for this year and presumably for a couple more years. The couple more years part surprised me. Agents are going to say that's a right tackle deal. Teams are going to say they're paying him to eventually move. But since he's a right tackle, maybe it's a hybrid deal. But that's the deal which is the monkey wrench in the equation, Lane Johnson's deal, because prior to that, you're talking $7 million per year to be the top right tackles. But it's no longer the case that your best pass rusher strictly lines up against Joe Thomas. Where did Von Miller line up in the Super Bowl a lot?
One of the things I'm with you on is that a good right tackle – is becoming in this NFL as important. We saw it in the Super Bowl. Von Miller's there. Khalil Mack's there. J.J. Watt's there. They line up against the right tackle. I'm with you there. I don't know that Mitchell Schwartz, to me, is that outstanding that I would pay him as though he were elite when he is solid, but certainly not elite.
But you're not going to pay someone to be a great run blocker. You're going to pay someone to be a pass protector, because you don't want your quarterback to get decimated like you saw Denver do to Tom Brady. And really should have had 10 sacks on Cam Newton, but he's elusive and mobile and stopped that. So you'd be paying him because he's a pass blocker. Yes, it is high, but it's what he should target, not necessarily what he's going to get.
Do you have a sense of what you think he might get actually on the open market? And to your point, you know, we actually have been going through a lot of things, and you know, the worst pass blocking lines in the NFL, four of the five, at least on Pro Football Focus's rankings, they all went to the playoffs, all won a playoff game. You got Seattle in there, you had Arizona, you had New England, and Kansas City. and their quarterbacks all get the ball out incredibly quickly. And even in that game where Denver did dominate New England had a pretty good chance to win it, and if they didn't miss an extra point, may have very well won that game. So how do you kind of balance that in kind of the, you know, devil's advocate to needing a great pass-blocking right tackle to say, if we have the right quarterback who can get the ball out, maybe it's not as valuable?
Yeah, but you're not going to have that because presumably you're going to take someone at number two, Goff, Wentz.
Sure.
He's going to play at some point this year. He's going to have the same recognition problems Brock Osweiler had because that dude held onto the ball way too long, particularly compared to Peyton Manning. So you're going to need a right tackle who can really pass protect because you don't have a quarterback that can really cover up for some deficiencies in pass protection. And you probably don't have a great back who can pick up someone because even with Peyton, you didn't trust Ronnie Hillman to be in there in pass protection because that was going to get him killed. Because I remember a case a long time ago. You know why Steve Young quit playing? Lawrence Phillips couldn't pick up a blitz. That was the last concussion. So you're really going to need the pass protection.
I agree. So I'm having fun with this because you're on the agent side of it, so I'd be kind of on the team side. All right, we're going to give you 5 years, $40 million. That's $8 a year, making you the highest paid pure right tackle at over $1 million per season. Why is that not enough?
That actually wouldn't be a bad settling point because I have target prices.
Okay.
You ask for something, you don't necessarily get it. If you can get teams to bite it, you have in your mind what you settle for as opposed to what you ask for. And also, demand's going to drive it because free agency is a fluid process. If there are more teams than you thought they were going to be interested, then sometimes you raise what you thought was your target price. And if you see that we only got one team, this is going to be tough, maybe I'm doing this with smoke and mirrors, then you're going to adjust your price.
To look at another free agent, off of Mitchell Schwartz and Alex Mack that is looking to potentially re-sign a deal is of course, Travis Benjamin. There were talks that he was 75% to 80% in late in last football season. Of course, one regime is removed and another one comes in, and yet he's still unsigned. Give Browns fans just some of the dialogue or some of the hiccups that might be coming and keeping this from Travis Benjamin re-signing with the Cleveland Browns if there is truly a dual interest.
Well, that regime change thing is big because a guy that the old coach or the old front office would want may not be a guy that is valued as much by the new one. The thing is, all these number two receivers, and the thing about Benjamin is he's undersized, so I think that's going to make him less attractive to some teams and some of the bigger number two receivers out there. They're going to want somewhere between $6 and $8 million. Michael Crabtree being the ceiling, he got $8.5 million a year to re-sign with Oakland is probably the best number two out there, or one of the best number twos in the league. Maybe Decker's the best number two overall, and $6 million kind of is the floor for what these guys are going to look for. So Benjamin should be at the lower end of that if you consider him a two.
And that's an interesting thing, and it's from an agent standpoint, you're always hyping your player, but you know it is an interesting world because you look at the deals that have been done. We know the salary cap went up again. There's a ton of money out there to be spent, and guys are going to get paid, you know, in free agency vastly, it seems, higher than what they necessarily have earned or produced or shown on tape at this point, because the guys that truly are that good don't usually hit the market.
That's true, because the more progressive teams or forward-thinking teams end up doing extensions for their guys, so they never hit the market, and then the truly valuable ones get tagged. So it ends up being guys on the market that aren't quite at that A-level, and they're going to get paid like A-level players sometimes. But the thing which Benjamin should be aware of is that familiarity brings comfort. Hugh Jackson came from Cincinnati. They got two receivers up. As soon as he became the head coach, first thing I said was one of those two guys is probably going to be a Cleveland Brown, whether it's Muhammad Sanu or Marvin Jones. And the other thing which kind of cuts in his favor is unless Hugh Jackson sees something in Dwayne Bowe, he's got to be gone because he basically paid him to be a practice squad player last year because that's how much he played, not more as the practice squad guy.
Yeah.
Got a $2.85 million guarantee. You got enough cap room to eat it. So you really can bring Benjamin back and sign one of those other guys.
Do you think Tashawn Gibson is going to find the market for him as appealing as he wants it to be?
Probably not, because he didn't have the year you want to have as a UFA. Yep. Sometimes that affects you, sometimes it doesn't. If you're still thinking Devin McCourty-type money, you may not have anyone try to bite on that. It may be a situation where he's going to have to decide, do I want to try to do a shorter-term deal where I get some security and then hit the market before it's too late for me to really get another big deal, or just try to get as good of a one as you can and then hope you can have the year next year in 2016 you had in 2014, then try to knock it out of the park.
And how, as an agent, do you balance something like that? Because you would imagine if he'd come off the year where he went to the Pro Bowl, now he did get hurt and miss the final five games that year, but certainly seemed to be a guy that was a ball hawk. How would how do you structure that? What would you think the best thing, if you were advising Tashawn Gibson, what would you be advising him?
Well, you work for the player, so what I try to do is present options to him, tell him, here's how this situation could play out. That since you didn't have your best year, you may not have the market that you thought you were going to have. You need to think about what you want to do in that situation. Since he's never really made any money because he was an undrafted guy, that may factor into his thinking that I'll take as much as I can right now as opposed to I'm going to bet on myself. That's a personal choice for him. So
sure,
you lay out the options, and you think you know ahead of time because you had this conversation early when the season ends. So he's had plenty of time to think of what he wants to do if that's the scenario that he's faced with.
Joel, we know pass rushers always at a premium. This will be the last one. I know you got to run. Guy like Bruce Irvin, Olivier Vernon, I mean, are they just going to break the bank because teams are so desperate to get guys that can get to the quarterback?
Oh, yeah, pass rushers always get paid. And the one thing that Bruce Irvin has in his favor is that whole familiarity brings comfort thing. The Atlanta Falcons couldn't sack a quarterback to save their lives last
year.
19 total sacks as a team, last in the league. A guy that coached him in Seattle, Dan Quinn, is there. Jacksonville has a ton of cap room. They can score with anybody, but they can't stop anybody. They need multiple pass rushers. You got Gus Bradley there. Oakland could use more defensive players. Ken Norton was his position coach. He's a defensive coordinator there. They're going to have a ton of cap room, close to $70 million. He just needs two of those teams to be available. And he's got a savvy agent, Joel Siegel, who represents Justin Houston. He'll play those teams off against each other. It could be other teams that he doesn't have any connection with that are interested. He's going to do fine, and that Vinnie Curry deal probably is his floor, which is like $9.25 million a year. So I'd put his target price at 10. Vernon was already looking for, before his strong second half of the year, $12 million per year, the max of Cam Jordan's deal. So after a strong second half of the year where he put as much pressure on the quarterback as almost anybody last eight games, he's going to look to be paid like an elite pass rusher. And that transition tag isn't going to be that much of a deterrent for one of these teams from abundance of cap room if they really want him. I was in a situation like that years ago where a transition tag didn't stop John Randall from becoming the highest paid defensive player in football because he was very close to being a Miami Dolphin. If the Minnesota Vikings did some things they really didn't want to do to just keep him from signing an offer sheet.
Joel, fascinating stuff as always. Great article. Everybody should check that out, of course, at CBSSports.com. It's an agent's take. How much the top free agents tag players target? And again, the numbers you put out there are the targets if you are the agent, not where the deals necessarily will end up. And you want big money for Mitchell Schwartz, which is probably part of the reason why that deal has not yet been done between the Browns and Mitchell, also a former great Emory grad. You can follow him on Twitter at Corey Joel, CorryJoel. Joel, always a pleasure, man.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, thank you very much. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm Gibbs, Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Interesting stuff there, Matt Wilhelm. What do you think? What do you think about that from Joel Corey?
First and foremost, my lead takeaway, and I'm sure it's yours as well, is I think it's absurd that who Mitchell Schwartz is, the role he plays for the Cleveland Browns, the fact that he's never been an All-Pro or a Pro Bowler would make him by far,
like 33%.
By 33%, by $3 million, the highest paid right tackle in the National Football League.
Yeah, right? That seems, am I wrong? Does that seem crazy? Am I wrong?
I mean, you want Mitchell Schwartz back.
Yes,
yes,
I do.
Okay, everyone does and should. And this, and not even taking a hometown discount, you want to pay him his value. And to pay him his value, I don't believe is paying him as the... And I know, this is his opportunity to cash in. I get it. And you're telling me cashing in for $7.5 million for Mitchell Schwartz, making him still the highest paid right tackle in the NFL, is not cashing in? There's got to be a happy medium or a middle ground when it comes to this.
Yes, absolutely. Gibbs, what do you think?
I think you want Mitchell Schwartz,
right?
But what's the price? You know, I mean, if this guy wants 10 or 12 million, you let him walk.
Yeah,
I mean, that's. I'm looking for the tweet. We had a tweet earlier that actually made me stop a little bit. And I'm like, that's interesting. What about Bitonio moving to right tackle? He brought it up. I'm not giving him due credit, and I apologize. I can't find the tweet right now. But he's like, what do you let Mitchell Schwartz go and you put Bitonio at right tackle?
So from what I've heard,
Kirk Lazarus, by the way,
I don't know this to be true or not, is that they don't think physically his body style, because he's kind of barrel chested, thick, doesn't have the longest arms.
And I think
that it's not a NFL tackle's body.
You're 100% right. And I actually believe that Joel Bitonio's body changed more towards what you're talking about. From year one
to year two.
To year two.
Yeah.
He became a true guard body in 1 year of experience in the NFL.
Yeah, so I think that certainly is an interesting thing there. If, again, when we talked about it, right, it's part of it is you have to get your head around the new paradigm of what players are going to get paid in the NFL, but at the same time, I don't think you want to make, you know, when I'm just looking at our guys, first of all, you don't want to make a guy, to me, Mitchell Schwartz, by far the highest paid right tackle in football. Very good player, and I'd pay him very good money. I think
and
he's
more
money
than, and he'd be making more money than Joe Thomas.
Around, a little bit around the same.
Okay, around.
So, you know, I just don't see that, and I know I've argued from the other side. I do believe the NFL's changing. I believe right tackles are important, but if you have the right system where you can get the ball out, I think you can be okay there. And I think the real question comes down to Joe Thomas cap number 9.5. So you're right. If he was getting about, he'd be making 9.75. So you are right.
Take this into account now.
Okay.
You've got Alex Mack, who opted out of 3 years, 24, which is 8.
Yep.
Joe Corey just said he's going to get more than that. So we'll call it 9. You've got 18.5 in Mack and Thomas, and you're potentially giving Schwartz 10. So you've got almost $29 million per year tied up in three players along your offensive line, okay, which is about 18% of the max salary cap that you have to spend in 2016.
Yeah.
On three players.
And you've had that for a while, and you're going to have – right.
You have had – and you've had these players for a while, and yet still we can't keep any quarterback upright, and we're not dominant on the ground running the football.
Right. Right.
What's wrong with this equation?
Something.
Is it the two guards?
People would listen. Joel Bitonio was just named to NFL.com's All Under 25 team.
It's my point.
No.
Okay. Who do you blame? The coaches that they run in and out of town?
I don't know if it's it could be part scheme. It could be. There are a lot of factors, but clearly the line hasn't performed at the level. And then to go ahead and say you're going to make this guy paid more than Joe Thomas. Plus, you'd have three guys on your line making $9 million a year. If you brought both, let's just
sounds like last year's defensive backfield to me.
It would be you'd have three guys on a line making north of nine a year on a team that, by all accounts, is not ready to contend for a Super Bowl.
Correct.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
I wouldn't mind keeping one of them, but that doesn't make sense.
And it'd be the same if, you know, you're paying Paul Kruger, you know, $6+ million as an outside linebacker, and you're going to go sign Mario Williams and pay him 8.
Yeah.
Because it coincides with, you know, your thought process on you don't pay those guys, the DeMarcus Wares of the world, the money that they deserve to play the role for a team without the winning coming almost guaranteed right along with it.
Absolutely.
You spend the money to go win now.
Yes.
Okay. We got 2 years to win a Super Bowl. We got 2 years to win this division and dominate and throw our hat in the tournament to raise that trophy. If you don't, it's small incremental steps, strategic moves,
right,
towards getting there in what year? Because it's not every year. And I think Lewis Riddick said it best. There's 8 to 10 teams that are planning to hoist that for a shot to hoist a trophy, and everyone else trying to win the offseason.
That's right.
That are most definitely, by Vegas odds, outside looking in.
Absolutely. And you look at the most recent odds on the Browns, they're not pretty. So to put all that money into a position that doesn't technically translate right into wins, I think is what one of the things you're seeing from an analytics standpoint. And to hear a guy like that say that, because I know a lot of people were saying, you know, what are they doing? Why have they not made that? You know, why haven't they signed him? What's going on? I think that hearing that and the sticker shock that at least for me, and I would imagine many people listening, comes along with it, that tells you why right there. That tells you why right there. Would you pay him that much? Gibbs, would you pay him that much?
I find it hard to pay double digits unless you're going to be a player that can change my franchise.
And I don't think a right tackle in the NFL can do that.
And the reason why is because 31 other teams think the same way.
Right.
If there was another great right tackle opposite their left tackle that could transcend the game and change the game and bring winning directly behind paying this man, we would have a $10 million a year right tackle, but we don't, and it's significantly less. You're talking $3 million less. There's a reason for it. So why do we want to be a trendsetter and go do it when there's not a guarantee behind it that we're going to win more than six games?
And I think that that's the point. I think that's why you're seeing. I thought it was interesting. He said that he doesn't expect Gip to get the kind of money that he wants out on the market. And he said $6+ million a year for Travis Benjamin, 6 to 8. That's a lot. That's a lot of money.
For the equivalent of who Travis Benjamin is throughout the National Football League, that's probably double.
That's a lot of money.
I could take that double digits and go get myself a pass rusher.
I would, so let's say that you didn't sign Mitchell Schwartz and Travis. You could, if you wanted to, you could sign a Bruce Irvin for that money and sign Bruce Irvin and a speedy wide receiver who may not have the pedigree. A guy, a restricted free agent that I love. And I don't know if you guys remember, he made a leaping 39-yard catch down the middle of the field. Jaren Brown from Clemson ran a 4.3 40, increases your team speed, 6.2, but he's a restricted free agent with the Cardinals. But that's a guy that I really like. But you could get that guy. You could probably get that guy, two other fast young players, and Bruce Irvin for what it would cost to bring Mitchell Schwartz and get back here, or Mitchell Schwartz and Benjamin. You probably get a lot more than that, in fact. So I think that's what you're looking at. What's the value proposition there? And I mean, those were eye-opening numbers. The Alex Mack one certainly didn't blow my mind. Sounded reasonable. If again, that's where the Browns are. Do you need a $9 million center? Do you need the highest paid center in the NFL where the Browns are right now? I know it's important to keep your guy protected, but and Cam Irving, what he showed last year, concerning, you get it. But he is drafted to be this
right.
guy.
And here's a different perspective on Alex Mack is, how many more wins would the Jacksonville Jaguars have with the state of that franchise had Alex Mack signed with the Jaguars 2 years ago and not been a Cleveland Brown? Would we have lost more or won more? And would the Jaguars won more football games, making Alex Mack at that time the highest paid center in the National Football League, and maybe have to do it again?
That's a tough one, because during that 7-9 season before he got hurt, he was playing at the height of his.
He was, and I'll say this too, though, it almost seemed like we took advantage. If you go back and look at that year and look at who was beaten and when, you know, at the time when the Browns beat New Orleans that year, you didn't know that New Orleans, the shine was off New Orleans from that season. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You go back and you look. So who did they beat in that year? New Orleans.
Pittsburgh.
Tennessee. Pittsburgh once, and Mac played, you know, half of that game, but you yep. barnstormed them. You beat Oakland. You beat Tampa.
Yeah.
So if I'm just going off the top of my head
and
here.
Atlanta.
Atlanta. Who, again, had a very down year.
That whole NFC South was down.
Yeah. We beat three teams in the NFC South. We beat the Steelers. We got swept by.
And the Bengals.
And we beat the Bengals once that
Thursday night
game.
Yep.
Yeah. That was probably the best win of the whole season.
So there were five wins, two in our division,
That was probably the best.
Yeah. 2-3 in the NFC South, and you beat the Raiders, and who's the seventh win?
Did I say Tennessee?
Oh, and the Saints.
Yeah.
No, Tennessee. You're right. Tennessee. The comeback. Yep.
Right.
The comeback.
So, right. So, when you look at that draft the following year, okay, the following season after that 2014 season, you had Oakland picking fourth and picked Amari Cooper.
Yep.
You had Tennessee picking second and they picked Marcus Mariota. Tampa Bay picked first in that draft and took Jameis Winston. You also beat New Orleans was picked right after us. They picked 13th. So they weren't that wasn't a good team. Atlanta picked where did Atlanta pick in that draft last year? Middle of the pack. Two quality wins were Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. But you took advantage of what had been a pretty favorable schedule. To say that in the beginning part of your season you would have an opportunity to beat 1, 2, 3 of the top four teams in the NFL draft. And by the way, you lost to Jacksonville in there. That was a pretty favorable stretch run that they had, and they took advantage of it. And then, unfortunately, they lost five straight, and you can take that back to Alex Mack. But remember this, Gibbs. When Alex Mack got hurt, you were counting the Pittsburgh game plan. You were 3-2. After he got hurt, you lost to Jacksonville. You beat Oakland, beat Tampa, beat Cincinnati, lost to Houston, beat Atlanta. So after he got hurt, you went 4-2 the next six games without Alex Mack.
That's true. Can't argue that.
You know, so it wasn't like, because I remember because of the way that Jacksonville game felt, it was like Alex Mack got hurt and our season was over. We won the next three games. Now it happened. So it just so happened we played Oakland, who was terrible, Tampa, who was terrible. And then we had on a Thursday night, I think, caught Cincinnati sleeping and pummeled them.
Yeah, that Thursday night game was awesome.
So even if you look at it right there, they won four out of the next six without Mack. Just it is interesting how the narrative, because I would have thought, thinking back on it, I would have thought what you thought. Once he got hurt, our offense went away. But that wasn't the case.
No, it's when we put in our other quarterback.
Yeah. I would rather spend our money. If we're going to do something, a splash. Because quite frankly, at this point, signing Mitchell Schwartz to $10 million, if Mitchell Schwartz was a free agent right tackle, okay? Let's just think about it this way for a second. If Mitchell Schwartz was a free agent right tackle on a 3-13 team, had never been to a Pro Bowl or been an All-Pro, and the Browns go out on day one of free agency and sign him to be, like, basically the highest-paid right tackle in the NFL, do you think Browns fans would be happy with that?
No.
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 No. So, I don't know. All right. We'll be back with more, CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs here. And I do think it is interesting. Do we still have these callers, Gibbs? Ron and Dan? All right, we'll get to that. But I think that's an interesting way to look at it. Let's pretend his name is not Mitchell Schwartz. Give him the exact same resume, former second-round pick, four solid years, very good player, not
four solid
an elite
years
player.
With the St. Louis Rams on a 500 football team.
Or worse.
Or you could say the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Raiders.
Right.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, he comes out and the Browns make a right tackle with that background and pedigree, the highest paid right tackle in the league by 30% to bring him in. Are you excited or are you calling us and being like, this new regime doesn't know what they're doing. Why are they wasting money like that?
It's a great perspective.
What do you think, Gibbs?
It makes sense.
If he was another team's player and the Browns signed him to that contract that Joel Corey was talking about, people would freak out.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the whole C&D level, getting paid A and B money. And you're like,
and I even think he's a B
doing?
He's a B player,
yeah,
but you'd be paying
player.
Him, or B plus, and you'd be paying him A plus 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 money. You'd make him the highest paid player at his position
by a lot
in the history of the National Football League.
By a lot.
And I heard what Joel was doing, talking about, well, you know, that Lane Johnson one, I consider it. Even in his write-up, he goes, he's getting paid like a left tackle because they plan to move him there, whereas Mitchell Schwartz is not moving to left tackle ever for the Browns or for whoever he goes to. And he said the best pure right tackle contract, $7 million. So I think when you look at it, you think about it that way. If the Browns were to spend, you know, on a center who was 30 going on 31, a multiple-time Pro Bowl center. You had just drafted Cam Irving a year ago, you know, and you're planning on starting a 19th overall pick in the draft at center. Would you pay Would you pay a 30-plus-year-old to be the highest-paid center in the NFL from a team that was a losing team?
Over the age of 30, no.
No,
right. But that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's what people are asking for.
I don't think so. I'd put my money into Mitchell Schwartz before I'd put my money into Mac.
I think there's to be honest with you, I think some of the fan perspective out there is there's a scare factor that comes along with losing either Mac or Schwartz or both. And I think, Nathan, what you've proven is looking around the league, giving how quickly quarterbacks get rid of the football, who was the worst, who protected best, who protected worst, that in some cases there are offensive lines out there with a good quarterback behind them that almost take on the same makeup that running backs have taken up in the National Football League. It's plug and play. Yep. If you have a system that works with a quarterback that can run your system and some playmakers around him, you just put some guys up in front of him. Look at what Seattle's done. Look at what Aaron Rodgers has done. You know, with just guys. I mean, Bakhtiari was a guy, and then all of a sudden, you know.
Now he's
a legit left tackle.
He was an undrafted free agent that had to step in, and people were freaking.
Corey Linsley, you know, was like a late draft pick by the Packers out of Ohio State. You know, and this is no Buckeye bias. Guy gets hurt, he steps in and does a good job. But he was a guy.
So, and Disco Puma, our guy, I love this guy. So he says, the fan perspective is, and I quote, why create more holes on a bad team? What's the point of sitting on this money? And my argument would be, you can carry it over, which again, you don't want to do that all the time. There'll be a time not to be. But if you do have a good coaching staff, you're going to get more out of your replacement players. We've heard coaches talk about that all the time. Look at the Patriots. The Patriots lost the whole interior of their offensive line and were starting undrafted free agents, I think, across the middle three and ended up doing a good job with it. So I think that when you look at this, you know, the point of sitting on the money is spend it in the right place. So if you said to me, look, we're going to indulge on an Olivier Vernon, we're going to indulge on a Bruce Irvin because they can get to the quarterback, that's fine. But I think if you flip it around, ask yourself that question, and you may come to another thing where you can say, yes, indeed, that is what I want to do. That's what I want to do. So you can say that if you looked at it, if they were coming from another team, how would you feel about those guys being signed by the Browns to that level money? Is it just because they're Browns guys? And I know you do have to retain your own, but if the deal the other way makes you cringe, then I would think that the deal would make you cringe this way.
Because the player's the player and the money's the money, regardless of where where they were drafted or what uniform they wore the year prior.
And I think in all this, we're not bad-mouthing the guys. We're not saying anything bad.
No, not at all.
This is real business. This is business talk.
But as Hugh Jackson said last week at the Combine, guys got to look out for their families. This might be Mitchell Schwartz's only payday.
Correct. I've said that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I can't fault those guys for asking for max money.
Correct.
I mean, it's what the market is. It's what the business of football is.
Correct.
You hope they come back? I don't know.
And that's all we're really doing here is we're having a football business conversation as it pertains to our Cleveland Browns.
Yes, we are. That's what we're doing. Bringing it. Let's go. And I want to know what you guys think about that, because I think it's an interesting way to look at it, especially when you hear those numbers. Ron in New Mexico, welcome to the show.
Hi, gentlemen. Three quick points. I'm in the mountains here. I want to get them out before I lose the call. Number one, the replacement for Petonio, was it Austin somebody?
Austin Pastor.
Am I dreaming, or did the run game get better with him?
You weren't dreaming. It did get better. It turned a little bit more of a power thing. It turned into more of a power run game. I think it was it coincided with a scheme shift, but at the same time, it coincided with the physicality he brought. Now, Joel Bitonio's battling injury all year, is our most physical offensive lineman, I believe.
Okay. Second point. I haven't heard any discussion, going into the mouth. I haven't heard any discussion about Danny Trevathan. I thought our linebacking was weak last year. Matt, does Danny Trevathan fit in? I was excited he was a free agent. Does he fit in the Browns' plans?
Third, I think he definitely would. I believe the Broncos are going to make him available.
Okay. Third, it's not. I think there's a chance that because of the shortage of perceived great or good quarterbacks, somebody's going to jump up and get that number one spot ahead of the Browns. I can't see the Titans turning down a trade for that and grabbing a good tackle in the first round and then having another shot at another good player. So if the Browns are left with the second pick, and let's say Goff is gone or Wentz is gone, and that's the one they had their heart set on, would they trade down and look for a Lynch or a Dak Prescott? Or what are your thoughts on that? And thank you.
I don't want to trade down. I don't think they trade down. I think they stay there and they take their quarterback. Now, if something were to happen where they do get jumped, which I don't think will happen, they need to decide if they thought both of those guys truly were that good. And if not, then you get pretty bummed out. But you certainly hope that the Browns do get their guy, that they identify a guy and they get him. When we come back, we're going to return with our final thoughts here on this Thursday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura, Wilhelm, Gibbs, and you.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Final thoughts here on this Thursday. Obviously, a lot that we talked about. Joel Corey was with us. We thank him. Some more mocks. I retweeted the Joel Corey article, so you can get that off my Twitter at Nathan Zagura. Also retweeted an article where Brent Sobleski from Bleacher Report sat down with former offensive coordinator of Cal, who worked with Jared Goff there, talked about his system and what he was asked to do. And one quote that I thought was very interesting, Gibbs, as you talked about from the mental aspect for Carson Wentz, this is a quote about Goff, and it says, quote, another thing we do with him, he was able to change protections at any time. He was allowed to change the play at any time. He probably had to do more than any NFL quarterback does right now. And then he goes through exactly what that is, pre-snap, post-snap, et cetera. That a fascinating read, just about understanding college offenses as well, and with Jared Goff, et cetera. And this is a guy who's been with Goff. He talks about Aaron Rodgers, talks about Andrew Luck, and was on the staff when Tim Couch was the Browns' number one overall pick back in 1999. So certainly a guy with a little bit of a track record and an interesting one at that to comment on things like that. It's going to be interesting. I believe it's going to be interesting to see what happens here over the next week. Free agency starts Wednesday. What do the Browns do? Is there any more purging? What kind of deals do these guys get on the market? And who are the guys the Browns go after? What's that profile?
That's what I'm most interested in, because I think that makeup of that individual is going to be something that we're going to be and recruit and draft moving forward. And while we know who's a Cleveland Brown that's going to hit the unrestricted market here potentially on Wednesday, what I'm actually more interested in, because I think that'll figure itself out, both the price and who stays and who goes, is I'm interested to see what players we can add outside of our Cleveland Browns to what we're doing. You know, is it a Sanu? Is it a Marvin Jones? You know, is it the Matthews kid out of Miami? Who is it? Because I think that's what gets me excited about the upcoming season. Because the Cleveland Browns' first step of coming together is this Wednesday.
Yeah. Let's find out. There are some guys out there, some interesting players. See what happens. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. Big thanks to Joel Corey. For Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zier. And, of course, our guy Dane Brugler. Follow him on Twitter at DPBrugler. Joel Corey at Corey Joel on Twitter. Thanks to those guys. For Gibbs, for Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zier saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.